The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Well, good afternoon. You are joining We the People with Aaron Ryan,
Bill Cundiff,
and Bob Martin.
Because separately, we're just, you know, we're nowhere. If it's just Bill and I, we don't have any music. If it's just Bob and I, we don't have any jokes.
You've got no foil.
If it's Bill and Bob, they just play an archive.
And if it's just the three of us, we don't have any guests.
Yeah. People are like, oh, not again.
Not again.
These knuckleheads.
We got a guest today, though.
We do, too.
We got a hot show coming up, folks.
I told Bill he had to do some reading, and he's like, well,
I'm a little concerned that we were going to be able to talk for 2 hours on our topic, and I got to reading, and it's like, I think we're going to need about 10 hours to cover this because there is a ton of information here. And you know what's fun is this is going to be stuff that you probably have not heard in the mainstream media.
Big
you
shock.
Probably won't hear in the mainstream media because you've really got to kind of dive into it, and there's a lot to it, but it's a fascinating story. And it's something that we should all be very concerned about.
Well, we did I've got to link those two. I haven't done that yet, but I shall. On today's page, I'll link the other program we did on the Montana Dam transfer. Now, for those of you that don't live in Montana, which is us and many of our listeners that do not live in Montana, you're thinking, why do I care?
Yeah, what's so fascinating about that?
Part of what we alluded to in that whole thing about a month ago is that there was a security element, a national security element to all of this. And Mr. Kogan has now completed his exhaustive research, actually, and now he can talk to us about all that. It is posted in its entirety. Bill printed two copies.
Yeah,
he thought it'd be handy if we both had one.
Well, I didn't think there was very much to it, and I hit the print button, and it's a 54-page report, and I made two copies, so... We need some more paper.
How comprehensive of you.
Oh, absolutely.
You're not very green. You printed them one-sided, too. That's pretty awesome.
But I think you'll be interested to know that this whole dam thing, there is an ISIS connection,
possibly. Not the whole dam thing, well, but the whole...
No, yeah, the whole, you know, dam...
D-A-N-O-N.
The whole damn thing.
Yeah, the whole damn thing. There's a lot of intrigue here. A lot of possibilities and definitely
a lot of bad possibilities. And, you know, the thing
issues.
Is, when legislators were presented with this, they backed up from it rather than take it on. And I think you'll be interested. Well, I don't think you'll be surprised, but I think you'll be interested to know why. So let's see. Do we have Larry on the line?
We did for a moment. However, he's on the East Coast, so he thought it was... Next hour, so he's but he is driving to a place where he is free of background noise and will call us back in another 2 or 3 minutes.
Oh, not a problem.
Oh, why
not
does this always happen? Why can't we all just be on the same time? What's up with this? This time zone thing is just a killer. Okay, because I was going to tell you a little bit about Mr. Kogan in case you missed the other one. He's the managing principal of Kogan Law Group, president and CEO of the Institute for Trade Standards and Sustainable Development, and this is like. Not the sustainable development that the green guys get all excited about. It's actually the original definition of the word sustainable. We did a program with him, I'm going to say like 14 months ago, and long before he was ever involved in all of this, because I read an article from the Institute of Trade Standards and Sustainable Development. Super, super interesting, and that's kind of how we got connected. Then he started working on this Montana situation. I believe he's involved in a lot of different things, but he does a lot of research that crosses over with national security and especially land use and land rights. So let's see, he has 25 years of international business and law experience, counseling both public and private clients on cross-border transactional planning and policy matters. Enabling recognition of the legislative, regulatory, policy, and trade investment risks and opportunities their activities may engender. So that's kind of like all sorts of stuff that most of us don't do. Since 2003, he's briefed the U.S. industry and various U.S. federal agencies, executive offices, and congressional committees concerning how emerging foreign, environmental, health and safety, and intellectual property laws, regulations, and technical product standards are impacting U.S. business profitability, technology, innovation, and international competitiveness. So this is stuff, I think he was a little bit ahead of his time. People weren't really looking at a lot of this. And now, especially with the terrorism coming here, actually, we all knew that was coming. We just didn't know when. So now it's becoming more prevalent over here. A lot of these topics are coming into tighter focus. He has a New Jersey-based firm at this point. Whoops. I just touched my screen. I made the print so big I can't read it. Too much of a good thing. He's based out in New Jersey. He created this nonprofit legal research, educational, and advocacy organization. That's the Institute for Sustainable for Trade Standards and Sustainable Development. It's a globally recognized NGO for reporting the analysis of growing influence of evolving foreign international public interest rules and private property rights. And Bob's giving us the high sign. It's all about the high sign. Do we have a song about high sign? We should. It's probably a Colorado song, isn't it?
Well, yeah, Rocky Mountain High.
We'll go back to that again. We always get derailed there. So we have Larry on the line.
He's here.
Right on. Well, I just briefed people on, well, like one quarter of your bio, Larry.
Well, you don't have to go that far.
Yeah, don't knock yourself out.
I did knock myself out.
Just call me, just refer to me as the, I guess, the disruptor.
Fly in the ointment.
We were going to call you the Don, actually.
No, I'm not the Don. There's the Don elsewhere.
Well, you kind of are the disruptor. We didn't tell them why the legislature bailed out on you with this. We weren't sure how you wanted to go about it, so...
Yeah, we wanted you to start with your lawsuit and why that was dropped, because I thought that was kind of an interesting story, and where it's kind of gone from there.
Well, the lawsuit brought up a number of issues relating to the overlap between federal Indian policy and national security interests.
And who were your clients on that suit?
The clients on that lawsuit were two Montana state senators, one sitting and one former, and a recreational business located north of the Flathead Indian Reservation.
Okay.
Along Calais, you know, around Big Fork, Montana, which is around the Flathead Lake, which is an incredibly gorgeous area.
And for the folks that missed the initial program on that, can you kind of give them a little thumbnail on the suit, where this all started?
This lawsuit was initiated because of the concern of these senators and the recreational business that federal Indian policy was being used as an excuse and a means to give the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes of northwestern Montana, which reside on the Flathead Indian Reservation, a major dam without many conditions at all, without following all of the regulatory requirements for the transfer of the dam to a new acquiring entity, without doing due diligence to make sure that the safety and security of the dam are assured, without allowing the people of northwestern Montana to have the right to a public hearing as is required in the regulations, and for the tribe, and because the tribe isn't accountable to anybody because it's a sovereign Indian nation under federal law. These were all concerns of the clients to that lawsuit, and they wanted that dam, if possible, to be, you know, that transfer to stop, because they wanted the federal court to look into the matter and then decide whether all of the I's were dotted and all the T's were crossed. But what we didn't expect was the blowback that we received from Washington, D.C. and from the local liberal press, because what we did cite was, and we do mention this in the report that I've shared with you, that there were allegations citing certain relationships with foreign government and foreign nationals and their affiliations with questionable groups that would raise serious questions in the minds of any objective person, especially if you are the government and you're charged with ensuring the safety and security of the American people.
Yeah, and this is where it gets interesting. I think if you want to, and our listeners, if you want to follow along and kind of read up on this, on the site we downloaded a link where you can download and print out a copy of this report he's talking about. It's going to blow your mind what's involved here.
The working paper is. And it's like 54 pages with, you know, with footnotes. Obviously, all of this is very well documented, so you don't have to, you know, take anybody's word for it. You can find that at wethepeopleradio.us, by the way. We kind of forgot to mention that. And I think we have to take a really quick break or we'll be behind. How are we doing? No high sign?
30 seconds.
Okay.
Yeah, so that'll give folks a chance to get in there, print this thing out, take a look at it, follow along with the story, because it gets a little bit complicated, and a lot of it is a lot of legal speak, but I think you're going to get the general idea when you read this report, what's at stake here, and why the lawsuit was dropped, why the clients bailed. It's very interesting, and it is a big, big national security risk. So with that...
Yes, it becomes... It actually is one of those things you probably wouldn't hear on mainstream media just because it'd be hard to do it in 2 minutes.
No.
If they'd stop covering everything in 2 minutes, they could actually teach us stuff, but that's our job.
That's our job.
All righty. We will be right back with you. We're being joined by Larry Kogan. We're chatting about national security, Indian tribes, sovereign nations, all that stuff. It'd be kind of interesting for you. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
But good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them? They took the whole Cherokee Nation. Put us on this reservation.
For that radiation.
Took away our native tongue and taught their English to our young.
Better than we did with our own.
Yeah, we're back.
And all the beads we made.
No, we're not.
I guess we're not.
Bob's got his finger on the button. Bob decides when we're back.
Okay. All right, we're back.
What is wrong with us?
Cherokee people.
I don't know.
There we go.
Cherokee
Now you've been given. Yeah. Now you've been
now,
given
now
the go-ahead.
Now we got the high sign. Yeah. Hey, we're here with Larry Kogan talking about the Indian nations and national security. We left off with the blowback you got when you filed your lawsuit, Larry. What kind of blowback did you get?
Well, we had a very antagonistic and dismissive Associated Press article. That was written by a journalist who wanted to make sure, based on the distribution of that article through the national press, that people had the impression that we had no foundation for any of the national security issues we had raised in the complaint to our lawsuit. And it was intentional. And that was the first bit of pushback that we had received. Then there was pushback coming through the Montana legislature that was received by the clients. The local press, the Missoulian, started alleging that we were racists, that we were conspiracy theorists, that we should honor the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes rather than criticize them. Now, I don't understand why we should honor anybody. We should be honoring the Constitution and the rule of law, not the rule of the Confederated Sailors and Kootenai tribes. But there was a lot of pressure that was unseen but felt by the clients, and they were getting viewed as people wearing tinfoil hats. They were being viewed as people that were against providing, you know, benefits and reparations to the Native American tribes, et cetera.
Which is really kind of amazing.
Politicians, they're very sensitive to these, you know, to such feedback.
Well, didn't they think there was going to be some blowback when they came out with this?
Well, they didn't expect the amount of information that we had really out there, and how that information touched the nerve of the Obama administration. They were concerned, actually. One of the clients had submitted an intervention to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, stating that they were expressly concerned about the risk of electromagnetic pulse attacks on or around the dams, and how that would impact the residing, you know, the local areas around the dam. Now, why would they raise that issue if they weren't concerned about national security? They were concerned about it, but I guess they really didn't anticipate the degree and extent of the blowback. Now, having dealt with international issues on very sensitive topics, I was aware of the blowback and counseled them to be prepared, but I don't think they were ever prepared regarding the extent and the type of blowback they received.
It's become extremely popular to just, you know, point the finger and brand somebody as a racist. That's a really solid tool to shut people up.
Well, this administration's real good at it.
Mm-hmm. They really
are nation,
perfected
for a nation that really wasn't looking at race relations in this very antagonistic way. He's created such antagonism and antimony among the races that he should go down in history as leaving that legacy.
Oh, absolutely. So, what was the result at that point?
Well, we were, you know, the clients were trying to defend themselves in some of the interviews that they received from the local newspaper. And then it just got to a fever pitch where they, you know, ultimately asked me to withdraw them, you know, one at a time from the lawsuit, and then ultimately we had to withdraw the lawsuit. But we did withdraw it in a favorable way without prejudice, which means that we can come back and file another lawsuit with other clients on the same or similar issues. We're not precluded from doing so.
Okay.
And believe me, that we have a crew of clients now that are very, very concerned about this, and I've asked us to draft another lawsuit.
Oh, okay. So they're willing to kind of go after it again?
A different group of people are willing to go after it because they understand the importance and significance of these issues. But it will be broader. It won't be just focusing on the dam. The dam is really a piece in a puzzle.
And that's what
the lawsuit will talk about.
Right, and that's really where I want to jump to. You came out with this report of additional information. You've compiled a huge amount of information on the acquisition of companies and uranium and Turkey. And let's jump to the report and what you found so far.
You know, we provided a table of contents at the beginning of the report so that people can follow along and see all the different issues here. And the interesting thing is that these dams are significant dams that are part of the Columbia River Basin electrical system, the transmission system, all along the Pacific Northwest and the Columbia River Basin itself, which is a major waterway, beginning in Canada and working its way out to the Pacific Ocean through the Columbia River at the borderline of Oregon and Washington. These dams together can be sequenced in releasing water to generate a lot of electrical power, both for, you know, irrigation and for electrical generation. And really, the tribes want it. They can really make the fish very comfortable.
And that's really what it's about. I mean, let's face it. We got to take care of the fish. So, on that table of contents, on item number three, it says new information confirming German intelligence findings regarding Turkey's pursuit of nuclear weapons.
But we have to tie, Larry, tie Turkey into this.
Okay.
Because that's
we go back to the lawsuits,
yeah.
Allegations. We noticed something really weird, unusual, that a foreign nation, the Republic of Turkey, was out there making outreach to Native American tribes, claiming that they had similar indigenous experiences at the hands of the European settlers. They were all oppressed in some way, and they had something in common to talk about concerning that. The Native American reservations do not get a lot of domestic investment interest because of all of their crazy laws and rules. They're not subject to regular state and federal rules. They're subject to tribal rules, and tribal rules tend to be very subjective and subject to the jurisprudence of tribal courts. And a lot of U.S. businesses don't want to get themselves involved in this because it's like going into a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
You never really get back out to federal court or state court once you're in the tribal court because there's this doctrine of tribal court exhaustion, which the federal courts will defer to. The matter could be at all related to a tribe and its jurisdiction. They will allow the deference go to the tribal court. And that costs a lot of money to get through the tribal court. And it's not objective. So, Turkey was looking at this as, I guess, a market opportunity to some extent, where the Turkish enterprises would come in and engage in business dealings with Native American tribes. Now, one of the ways in which Turkey was pushing this was through leasing of land and building on Native American reservations. So back in 2011, or 2010, they started inviting Native American tribes, 17 of them, to Istanbul, Turkey for a week, all expenses paid.
Yeah.
Very interesting. You know, and they selected 17, and there's 566 federally recognized tribes, but they selected 17. The year before that, in 2009, they visited some reservations, one in South Dakota, one out in Arizona. They could have chosen among many, but they chose those two. So we figured, what the heck is going on here? Let's see what these reservations may have in common.
So it wasn't about the casinos then.
I don't believe it was about the casinos, though. Yeah, it might be an interesting investment for Turkish enterprises, but really, we found was that these reservations were each located within 100 miles of either a nuclear power plant, a nuclear fuel facility, or uranium mines and deposits. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in 2011, the Turkish government had been lobbying Congress. That includes both Republicans and Democrats. Congressman Cole out of Oklahoma, the only Native American in Congress as a representative, had sponsored a bill. It was for Turkish enterprises, and it was a test bill. We had, I think, 7 or 8 tribes that were going to they were going to work with on a leasing basis to see how it would work. And that received blowback in Congress. Why are we letting Turkey have an advantage, especially given Turkey's known harboring of terrorist organizations, etc. And then there was another bill by Congressman Heinrich out of New Mexico, a Democrat, whereas Mr. Cole was a Republican. And he came out with something called the Hearth Act. And the Hearth Act was a bit less ominous sounding because it didn't mention Turkey at all. And it was applicable to all 566 federally recognized tribes. And they all loved it. They all supported it. Congressmen and congresswomen were taken to dinner. We noted that also in the allegations. And in January 2012, July of 2012, it was signed into law by President Obama after both houses overwhelmingly approved it. So now you have a law that allows foreign as well as domestic entities to lease Native American reservation land and buildings for up to 75 years, considering renewal, for any number of different purposes, including business purposes, agricultural purposes, education and research purposes, and religious purposes.
So what was the
these were important things for the court to consider.
What was the selling point for that? You know, there's always, it's like, here, this is all we're going to do.
Reservations, Aaron, mm-hmm. were, at best, the Bureau of Indian Affairs of the Department of Interior is one of the least competent federal agencies out there. It's an agency that's run by Indians for Indians. It is not any bit objective. And unfortunately, they don't seem to have the skill set to do very much. And as a result, the leasing review, the review of leases that the Native American tribes would enter into with third parties would take forever. So the ostensible reason that this law was enacted was to make leasing more streamlined. Once leasing rules from a tribe are approved in toto, then the specific leasing transactions will need not be looked at by the Department of Interior Bureau of Indian Affairs. Hmm. So it's pretty much left to them.
And I guess the whole mineral angle wasn't looked at by the House or Senate when they approved.
Well, the minerals, you couldn't extract anything. You couldn't extract natural resources. You could do everything else.
Okay.
If you extracted natural resources, it would have to go through the normal leasing rules procedure.
Okay.
So you would assume, reasonable people would assume that it would be vetted. But if they vet those types of transactions the same way they vet the Syrian refugees, I wouldn't bet on anything.
I was just going to go there.
Or the no-fly list, or a lot of these things that sound good, but in practice, they're not actually being handled. We have to take another really quick break, and then we're going to come back with Mr. Kogan. Quite a bit going on here. Let's see. The title of his report is Highly Questionable Turkey, Open Border and Greater Tribal Sovereignty Policies Together Undermine U.S. National Security. That is posted on our website, wethepeopleradio.us, along with all of the backup. So you don't have to take our word for it. Feel free to do some reading.
Do a little homework.
We'll be right back, and Mr. Kogan will talk us through it.
I'm impressed with my attorney, Bernie. I'm impressed with his influential friends. He's got very big connections, and I follow his directions. Bernie knows his way around, and so I always do what Bernie recommends. I am blessed with my attorney, Bernie. I'm impressed with the way he runs the store. He's got Dodger season boxes and an office full of foxes. It's amazing all the different things your average guy might need a lawyer for. Bernie tells
somebody, somewhere, tell her it's unfair. Can I get
definitely going to need a witness, because if the witness bails out, the case goes away. Can't have that this time. Hey, so Larry, talk to us about that anyway. You think the folks that are pressing this case this time will stick with it?
We certainly hope so, because they're irrigators. Okay, they're getting affected by the federal government's control of both the access to water on the Flathead Indian Reservation, as well as the exercise by these people of their what should be state legal rights to use the water. And this affects the bottom line for them. If they can't get access to water or have the ability to exercise their legally valid water rights, then they end up experiencing economic harm. And legal harm as well, the extinguishment or the diminishment of their legal rights. The state senators were more concerned with their constituents. They were not directly harmed by this because these guys lived north of the reservation.
Mm.
So their standing to sue existed because of their interventions administratively with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. However, when it comes to, push comes to shove, they weren't as economically harmed as the new group of clients that have been very brave and dedicated to the effort to, disclose all of the information that's possible about what's occurring.
And all this information you're going to disclose on their behalf, are you going to get into the whole national security issue, or is it going to stay more based on the water side of it?
The water. Well, the lawsuit is going to be focused more on the Indian policy and how it affects the exercise and use of the water and the water rights. It's also going to be looking at how the federal government controls everything in that area and how they're manipulating or revising U.S. history and law in order to do it. Those things I really am not at liberty to talk about because I don't want to divulge our strategy or our tactics to the government.
True.
We already have enough forces arrayed against us, as we learned when we had the emergency hearing in Washington on September 4th, 2 days after we filed the lawsuit, which itself was its own theater.
And what who held the hearing, and what was that about?
Well, we had a very knowledgeable judge assigned to us, Judge Royce Lambert, in the U.S. Federal District Court of the for the District of Columbia. And hours before we had been scheduled to attend the hearing, we were advised that the judge had changed, was unavailable, quote unquote. In his place, we had a judge, Rudolph Contreras. Mr. Contreras is an Obama appointee judge.
Hmm.
And as the hearing unfolded, we saw the way he conducts kangaroo court. He didn't want anything to hear about national security issues. He didn't want to talk about even racial discrimination issues, which were among the allegations in our lawsuit. But he only wanted to know about the narrow issue of whether we were opposing FERC's order to convey the dam, which the Department of Justice was all too happy to say occurred 30 years ago, in 1985.
So it looks like they'll be successful in keeping the national security issues out of this lawsuit and out of the public
eye. No, they were successful in keeping it out, which
right.
is why this report was issued henceforth, following that lawsuit, because now the information's out. They can't say, I don't want to hear about it, because it's already there. It would be negligent, if not grossly negligent, if not reckless of this government, to say that the record doesn't exist.
Sure, because, this one article that we've posted of yours, setting the record straight about our Kerdam lawsuit and Turkey, that was published in the Western Ag Report.
It will appear. It hasn't yet appeared. Gave you an advance.
Oh, I did not know that.
So don't tell them that you've pre-published. But in any event, other media will also report about it, and it will be discussed, because this government's engaging in a series of cover-ups, and it's not just with respect to what's happening on the Flathead Indian Reservation. It seems to have a modus operandi of covering things up it doesn't want anyone to know about.
Well,
as you know, the ISIS strategy in the Middle East is a failure, and they try to cover that up for a long period of time, let alone Benghazi and everything else.
Well, and so here on our soil, basically they're ushering in foreign entities. Now, some people would say, even if they mine the uranium, they can't take it out of the country. They're not allowed to take sensitive minerals. So what do you say to those folks?
Well, that may or may not be true, depending upon whether this White House decides to tell the Immigration and Naturalization Service, Customs and Border Patrol, to stand down and look the other way when it does things.
Mm-hmm.
It already does this with respect to migrants.
Right, I was
stand
just going to say.
Stand down, look the other way.
Oh, yeah, they're absolutely doing that.
Refugee policy, as the report shows, they don't want you to look into the backgrounds of people because it's sensitive religious or sensitive politics. You can't look into those issues. You can't look on social media to see what they say and use it against them, even though it's a public arena. And they have no entitlement to privacy when they say incendiary things. But this administration believes that it can act in an extra-constitutional way to do what it wants.
So, I'm reading your report, Larry. And a couple of things
Bill was totally freaked out by your report,
yeah,
by the way.
A couple of things jumped out at me.
I've received the same reaction from a number of people.
Yeah, it's frightening. The administration has a relationship with Turkey. And on page 9 and 10, that's where it kind of started getting a little weird. It says, even though that the United States and Turkey have deeply held ideological differences in the civil nuclear realm, both have compelling interests, or common interests. And then we talk about this Article 8, the Turkey 123 agreement. Talk to us about that, because it looks like they're going to circumvent that and allow, maybe due to the fact that Iran is moving forward with a bomb, we might just allow Turkey to develop one as well with our help, kind of under the covers without the public knowing about it. Am I getting that right?
That's correct. I mean, there's lots of cross currents right now. I mean, there's the Turkey-Russia cross-current, then there's the Iran-Turkey cross-current. Iran, is, as you know, is seeking to dominate the region.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, one could agree that the policies of the prior administration in there didn't exactly prevent them from happening. Okay, and the current administration, with its withdrawal, just gave them control on a silver platter. Okay, so you have, you know, Tweedledee and then Tweedledum making mistakes, and you have the result that Iran is out there trying to take as much control of the situation as possible. Now, Turkey is the counterforce to that, potentially, given its size, given the size of its military, given its role on paper in NATO, which itself is a very sensitive issue because that was one of the things the State Department blew back on our lawsuit regarding. Turkey is a NATO ally. How dare you accuse Turkey of doing anything mm-hmm. against U.S. national interest? That 123 agreement is a civilian nuclear cooperation treaty. The U.S. enters into those with a number of different countries. Interestingly, as the report reflects, in 2000, when President Clinton signed the agreement with Turkey prior to the end of his administration, it wasn't, the ink had not even dried, and Turkey was caught cheating with Pakistan and moving nuclear fissile material around. So when the Bush people came in, they suspended the agreement and undertook, or tried to undertake, a due diligence review of really what Turkey was up to. And they didn't go forward to Congress saying everything has been cleared up until the end of the Bush administration, until 2008. If you remember, Turkey wasn't giving us airbase use back during the Bush administration.
Yeah, and they're not exactly helping us right now either.
So Erdogan, the prime minister, he likes to play three-level chess. He talks with forked tongue, which is probably why he can mm-hmm. talk to the Native American tribes real well.
Just going to say. I was like, and therein is our therein is our link. Well, I don't know. I just look at all of this. You know, the item B you have on page 10 here.
But Aaron, going back to Article 8 that yeah. Bob had asked about, Article 8 basically says no extra enriching or processing of nuclear material.
Right.
I.e. for non-civilian use, for military use. Now, the interesting thing is that just like Iran, which officially stated that it doesn't, it will not sacrifice its what it considers its inalienable right to reprocess and enrich as a matter of national security for itself. Turkey supported them in the nuclear group meetings
mm-hmm.
with deals with all the parties that have signed the non-proliferation treaties and agree to submit any movement of nuclear material to oversight and review. So Turkey supported Iran on that. Amazing. Turkey doesn't believe it's bound by that Article 8 if it needs to be to follow its own interests. And if the Obama administration wants to work with Turkey, which it certainly does because it's the ISIS strategy that it shares with or doesn't share with Turkey isn't working, well, you know, it may have to do a quid for a quo.
Tell you what, it's always the backstory that's the stuff we should be watching, and unfortunately, this isn't where the focus is. We're looking at all sorts of other things,
and
things
our administration
that just get everybody all worked up.
Could allow that to happen, you know, behind the scenes, and we would never know it. And here's Turkey converting their civilian level uranium to weapons grade uranium, and we're sitting here fat, dumb, and happy thinking nothing's
kind of
going on
and kind of moving in on us. We're busy looking at Syrian refugees when we have these guys using tribal sovereignty rights to just waltz right in. We have to take
But this is why we brought it up now. We didn't want this to be the side circus on another lawsuit.
Right.
Well, people now have enough time to really look at this closely and say, you know, this administration isn't being forthcoming again. And it's not being transparent, and it's not being honest.
Right.
Big shock.
All right, we're gonna take another quick break, and then we're gonna jump right back in here because this is where it starts getting a little bit dicey.
Yes, don't miss the second hour because it's going to get interesting. If it hasn't already got you, and you can find all this at wethepeopleradio.us. Look on the page for today. Got all the info about Larry and all the documentation we're referring to. We'll be right back.
Don't let them pick guitars and drive them old trucks. Make them be doctors and lawyers and such.
Well, when he took us into court, I couldn't believe my eyes. The judge was a fishing buddy that I recognized. I said, hey, judge, old buddy, old pal, I'll pay you that $100 if you get me out of this spot. So he gave my friends a little fine to pay. He turned around and grinned at me and said, 90 days, Jerry, when you're hot, you're hot. And I said, thank you,
when you're hot, you're hot. When you're not.
Let my friends go free and throw the book at me. He said, well, when you're hot, you're hot.
Yeah, that sounds like the judge Larry's got looking at his lawsuit.
Yeah, but there's a lot of good lawyer songs out there. I did not know that. Hopefully we'll play a few you haven't heard before, Larry.
Yeah, so we've got about 3-4 minutes here.
Set up the second hour for us, will you? Uh-oh, do we have him on silence? No.
No, I'm here.
There he is.
What would you like to talk about during the second hour?
Well, let's get into page 10 of 54, so, you know, I think we've got a lot of choices.
I want to get into this URI thing and how that's got the Turkish connection and what they have access to in the United States and where that can all end up leading.
I can even back you up on that one. Let's go back a little bit to see exactly who's building Turkey's civilian nuclear plants right now.
There you go.
Okay, and we could say that the Russians have one plant that's being constructed. And then we have a consortium of Japanese and French companies building a second plant. And one of those companies is a French state-owned company called Areva. And Areva has connections also in Idaho, where the Idaho National Laboratory is, which is the U.S. top research lab on nuclear fuel.
Mm-hmm.
And, for the people of Montana, that's a little too close for comfort. Why would, you have Areva building Turkey's nuclear plant, and it has access to all of this opportunity to gain information in Idaho? In fact, the Obama administration gave it a $2 billion loan guarantee to build a nuclear enriching facility in Idaho because one of the disadvantages the U.S. has in entering into these nuclear cooperation agreements is it has very little leverage because we're out of the nuclear fuel and enrichment business in this country because of all the greenies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we import 90% of our uranium.
Yeah,
you believe that? With all the uranium mines in this country, we import 90%?
So that really...
The Russians control us.
Well, also, too, I think we have to look at, the United States has always had a fairly large technological advantage with a lot of this stuff, and now here we are basically sharing our technology with everyone. So there is no advantage, folks. We don't have as far as nuclear development, we have no advantage. It's all
just look at the Pacific. Look at the trade agreement with the Pacific. Okay, Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. We give it all away. The U.S. industry acts stupid. They complain to the White House. help protect my intellectual property and to give it away, subject to 51% joint venture rules of China. That means the Chinese don't control the company when you set up a joint venture.
Right.
And they actually, and the Americans think that they're going to be able to protect their IP. I mean, that's just downright stupid management.
And we'll come back with more on that particular topic. Lots more. You're listening to We the People Radio. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. You can get email addresses for Aaron and Bill and phone numbers. And if you've got ideas for programs or guests you'd like to hear from, especially people who have in-depth stories that can't actually get them out in 2 minutes, we're a good platform for that sort of thing. Stuff you don't hear anywhere else, like today. We're speaking with Larry Kogan. He's expanding for us on the Kerr Dam issue. We've covered that in we covered the dam and the irrigation and that kind of thing, and then we talked a little bit about the national security issues. But today is all about the national security part. So, Larry, you know, I'm looking at your table of contents here for the report you issued, and it seems to me like this number five, new information that the U.S. is expanding its nuclear technological capabilities as leverage against potential Middle East nuclear proliferation risks. Like,
yes.
That's it. I mean, all of this is just a huge...
That's where James Taylor and Kerry come in.
Yeah.
They're going to negotiate all that for us. And
thank God. I feel so much better.
Keep us safe.
Oh, that might account for the stalled administration efforts to jumpstart private construction of U.S.-based nuclear enrichment and reprocessing facilities.
Well, they need to do that because these 1-2-3 agreements, as we discussed during the first hour, require some type of U.S. market in nuclear materials. Because the whole goal of these agreements is to compel the other side to give them the spent fuel rods so that the U.S. can do the reprocessing and to provide them with new fuel. You don't want those countries engaging in their own processing because you then have no control over what they do with that. The problem is the U.S. isn't in that market as much anymore because we don't do it for ourselves. We import it in a finished form. And for that reason... it's essential that, as a matter of U.S. national security, that we start doing it again in this country, except the green groups are preventing it. They don't like nuclear power. They would rather you have windmills and solar panels.
Who do we import those from?
Mostly Russia.
Hmm. And they have no problem marketing those to other countries that are necessarily friendly.
Hold on. There's actually another country, you may remember the name of this one, Kazakhstan. Now, who do you remember from Kazakhstan?
Sasha
Baron Cohen?
Okay. Yeah, I saw that movie.
I was like, wait a minute, was that in Wag the Dog?
Close.
Borat
is, you know, this is Borat's homeland. Okay. Now, this country has one incredible city, and they're doing a lot of business in natural resource. So we're doing now business with them, rather than doing it ourselves. Just like... The trade where you export all your manufacturing capability and now we're dependent on China for manufacturing, we just lost our own manufacturing capability. The government spins it such that, we're doing higher manufacturing process. Yeah, but, you know, when you deal with high manufacturing process, you're not dealing with the same volume of manufacturing, and therefore you will lose your skill set. Same thing here with nuclear enrichment and processing. We're going to lose that skill set. Mm-hmm. We haven't had a new build except recently, in the last 35 years, all because of these green groups.
Right.
That's a national security risk all by itself. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we need to build those enrichment and reprocessing facilities. And Areva, the French government-owned company, with a division that's actually profitable, was given a $2 billion loan guarantee by the Obama administration back in 2010. Unfortunately, the market fell out with nuclear materials because of the low price of natural gas. So there's economics involved in why that plant was never built.
Mm. interesting. And then your other point here that, I mean, every single one of these, it's almost hard to decide if it's getting scarier or if we've just hit the scary threshold and keep going.
Well, and why we're not being told about this.
Exactly. Your report also has new information that electricity generated by Kerr and Hungry Horse Dams, dam and reservoir releases likely contributed to the Idaho National Laboratory uranium enrichment and reprocessing activities and nuclear fuel experiments.
If there was any, then we would be, you know, they would be able to, it would contribute. Now, there are older facilities over there, but they can't dispose of the nuclear waste. So they need new facilities. Now, the Navy stepped in because they can't get anybody in the market to build a plant because they can't get third-party financing.
Mm.
You know, banks won't lend to a facility that may not generate a profit so they can get paid back, to have their debt service. So the Navy's walking, and the Navy needs to do this because you've got every civilian nuclear power plant that's got nuclear fuel waste that needs it taken care of. At the same time, the nuclear reactors on the U.S. Naval Forces need to be taken care of. So the Navy's stepping in and doing its own facility where the market can't provide.
Hmm. And so... I'm looking at these 1, 2, 3 agreements and Turkey being pressured into, I don't know if they're necessarily pressured into developing their own, but the Obama administration looking the other way because of the Syria Islamic States and the rise of the Islamic States in Iraq and Syria is going to force Turkey into building their own bomb, and we're going to look the other way while they do that.
Well, it's more or less the Iran challenge than it is the ISIS challenge, because Turkey is harboring ISIS and helps ISIS bring in oil from Iraq. Okay, that's one of the interesting things. The Russians actually reported on this, that Prime Minister Erdogan's family is financially benefiting by Turkey buying fuel from the ISIS group in Iraq and basically reselling it at a profit.
Do you think that had anything to do with the reason we pulled our jets out of Turkey? I mean, do you think that was a voluntary thing, or do you think we were told to pull them out?
Well, we dictate to them. They don't dictate to us, except when they start putting in, you know, where they sponsor terror cells that could be in the United States presently. That could be their leverage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Obama administration created ISIS. Okay, we all know that. It's in the news.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because they thought they were smarter than everybody. All the intellectuals from the Ivy League thought that they were smarter than everybody and they could play a three-level chess game just as good as the Middle Eastern rulers can. Erdogan is a good chess player. Okay, Mr. Obama is not. And as a result, he created an ISIS now that works against him as Mr. Erdogan's ISIS works against him when it suits them. And they're here. FBI has said ISIS is present in some way in all 50 U.S. states.
God.
Yeah. You create a monster, and you have no control over that monster.
Yeah, because I'm looking at your one item here, 7 in your outline. New information strongly suggests that the lack of federal oversight of sovereign Native American reservations, including Montana's Flathead Indian Reservation, renders them vulnerable to Mexican drug cartels and Islamic terrorist use as, quote, forward operating bases. That should concern everyone.
Well, I have to attribute the term forward operating bases, 326 forward operating bases, to my colleague Bob Fanning from Montana. He was the one that came up with that term of art to freak people out, and he's done a good job of it.
Well, it's true, because correct. When my brother was over there in Afghanistan, that's what he was building, was the FOBs, they term them, and the FOBs are the front line.
Yes. They are staging points. They mm-hmm. are platforms. They are enabling facilities, etc., all of the above. And when you have a sovereign Indian nation, and that sovereignty is expanded by a federal government policy of permissiveness and giveaways and regulatory waivers and exceptions and exemptions from normal, ordinary regulatory requirements, you have a sense of almost lawlessness, if not unaccountability and non-transparency on these reservations. State and federal rules don't apply there. You have to have an actual commitment of a crime for the feds to have jurisdiction. But when you're playing a terrorist attack, there is no crime yet. At least none that you can prove. That's what makes this that significant a risk. And people will tell you who live on the reservation that there isn't any law enforcement anywhere, especially in the Flathead. They will tell you that. So people have to carry arms in order to serve as a law where the law doesn't appear.
And so what do we do about that at this point?
I'm sorry.
I mean, how do we, you know, if these guys are setting these up as forward operating bases here, and we already know that, you know, we have all these independent and not so independent guys like the San Bernardino terrorist guys, how do we stop this, or, you know, at least slow it down? Is that possible?
How do we stop it without losing all of our civil liberties is the question.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, and that's where people. And I don't necessarily disagree. Don't want to give up any more rights. I think what we have on the books now give us plenty of power to find these guys and prosecute them.
But none.
I don't think they really want to. I hate to say that, but
I don't think they do either. But also,
no, they would rather go after Second Amendment gun rights.
Yeah,
than
exactly.
Deal with the guns in the inner cities, just like the guns. And the potential for other weaponry on reservations. They won't do that.
And
that would intrude upon Native American sovereignty. You can't do that.
And that is more and more looking like a diversion tactic. I think anybody would agree that, you know, when you have an attack like that and then you go after the guns, you're just taking the focus off the real problem. And that's the part that I think our administration I think has really got a hand in. They're stopping our law enforcement, you know, the FBI, Homeland Security. They're all being told to stand down, just like our immigration guys are being told to stand down. And I don't think that can really stop until we get a new administration, can it?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, this administration believes in no borders, believes in international law. It doesn't believe in the United States Constitution because it believes the Constitution is an impediment to one-world governance. And, a different administration may, if it does what it says it will do, and if it is other than a progressive, liberal, socialist government like the present one, it will do what's necessary to protect the American people, preserve the Constitution, and respect the rule of law. But we're not guaranteed that anymore.
Mm-mm.
This is a whole new paradigm.
Right.
How far have we gone with this sovereignty issue as far as the tribes go? I mean, how much...
They just believe they're entitled to almost anything. They believe that they're entitled to their Aboriginal lands and water rights. They want to go beyond the bounds of the reservation as if American history didn't exist.
Well, they're already doing that. I mean...
And it's unfair. It is unfair to say that all tribes think the same way. And I wish to convey that message. But the ones that are receiving all of the bounty and all of the welfare from the federal government, the U.S. taxpayer, they see things, you know, in a way where they're entitled to it.
Mm-hmm.
This tribe, this Confederated Status Kootenai tribe, receives billion-dollar contracts in the military. As you notice from the earlier part of the paper, not only do they do uranium cleanups for the military, they do Air Force part procurement for foreign air forces like the Saudi Arabia Air Force, the Turkish Air Force, the Libyan Air Force. They have sensitive national security access to Savannah nuclear weaponry in the Savannah nuclear facility, which is the number one nuclear weapons facility in the United States.
Wow.
What is going on?
Yeah. And see, you don't hear anything about that in mainstream. You hear not a word.
They wouldn't want. It would embarrass the administration because they decided to turn their heads the other way.
Mm-hmm. And that you know, turning their heads the other way isn't a new thing for our administration. But boy, when you're talking about this level of neglect,
It's almost like in
the philosophy. This man does not believe. This president believes. He thinks like a foreigner.
Yeah.
He doesn't think like an American.
Yeah, we won't even get into why he thinks like a foreigner.
He can claim, and the Democratic National Committee can claim he's an American-thinking president, but he is not.
No.
He's a foreign-thinking president.
No, and that is really reflected in the whole border issue. I mean, you know, Europe's gone to no borders, and that's worked out real good for them. And so we need to do the same thing. We need to just get rid of our borders and just let the free flow of peoples, which is just a load.
Well, then you have the United Nations Human Rights Commission coming in.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at some of the reports, I mean, the Brookings Institute, the Liberal Brookings Institute even took umbrage with the fact that things have gone a bit too far.
Sure, because the blue helmets will be right behind them, and then that's who we're going to answer to.
Well, that'll be terrific. We need to take a really quick break. We'll be right back. We are chatting with Larry Kogan about all sorts of things that are probably making your blood pressure go up. You can... If you don't believe us, or if you do believe us and you'd like to see the rest of the story, there is an extensive report on our website, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
Give a damn buzzing.
Nice. Theme song for the whole issue. All right, Larry. We don't want to run out of time before we get to the some of your bottom line stuff. I mean, literally on page 24 of 54, you get to the super scary stuff. New information confirms Turkey cannot be considered a reliable NATO ally, given its facilitation and harboring of Islamic State and Muslim Brotherhood, which are currently operating in the U.S. And you give extensive documentation of the Turkey Muslim Brotherhood links and policies, and then the Turkey ISIS links.
Yeah, and this is not old news. This is stuff that came out in a report in November of 2014. Some of the ISIS Turkey links. Talk to us a little bit about that and why we should be really concerned about Turkey, our friend.
Well, Turkey, in our complaint, we had. Included allegations based on media reports coming out of the Middle East, as well as media reports coming out of Europe and the United States, that Turkey harbors terrorist groups. Among the most prominent is the Muslim Brotherhood. You may recall the Muslim Brotherhood was the government temporarily in charge of the Egyptian government when the Obama administration turned their head the other way, when Mr. Mubarak was in a way, or helped push Mr. Mubarak out of office. The Arab Spring, and Muslim Brotherhood was the moderate force within the Muslim world that the administration embraced and sought out. It had already diverted the Bush administration from focusing on really what Sharia law was all about, and now the Obama administration sought them out. And they also, the Turkish government also harbors, facilitates, hosts Hamas, Hezbollah, and ISIS people. Now, one of the things that I found very troubling, and it actually put the hair on the back of my neck up, was, the extent to which Muslim Brotherhood is actually influencing White House policy. And if they have a network of organizations throughout the country that do as a matter of business, the madrasa business and other types of businesses that allow them to derive revenue and promote their interests at the expense of ours. That's a real troubling thought. ISIS and Muslim Brotherhood are both in the United States. The FBI has admitted them. But they haven't come up with a game plan. They're just monitoring.
And how can you monitor organizations like that that so openly disregard our laws and openly want to destroy America? Why do they even allow them to be here?
That's a good question. If you had an American-thinking president who wasn't interested in bowing over, bowing down to, curtsying, pirouetting in front of foreign countries and apologizing, then you might have a different scenario. But this president, being a foreign thinker, and acting like a foreign entity within the White House, doesn't see things the same way.
No, he takes the whole keep your enemies close thing a little bit too seriously.
I don't know if he considers them his enemy.
Well, that's true, too.
What is his purpose? I have no idea. All I know is that it is not consistent with his oath of office, and I have the faintest of ideas why the GOP doesn't seek to impeach him. If there's any president that's violated the Constitution and placed the American people at risk, it's him.
Well, we need 67 votes in the Senate. So
right, that's why. They don't want to be seen as racist.
Yeah, obviously we don't have
my
that.
My goodness. My goodness.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a concern. I mean, in light of what's happened.
I have to tell you, one of the interesting things that happened with our lawsuit was that we were contacted by Al Jazeera eventually.
Oh, you're kidding.
They wanted to interview us.
Did you talk to him long enough to find out what angle they wanted?
Well, they wanted to interview me. They went to my Montana staff, and I told them to talk to me. Then when they talked to me, we'd love to interview. So I thought about doing it in New York and then realized what might be their purpose. Obviously, it's intimidation and harassment.
Sure.
But who knows what else they're capable of if they're all here.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But we thought perhaps it came from abroad. Somehow, based upon the information we've unearthed in this report, this could have been coming down from people operating in the White House, for all we know.
Well,
that's a scary thought.
Well, yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, there'll probably never be a written link to that, but you have to wonder when all these agencies are just standing down and letting this happen. That has to be coming from the top somewhere.
Oh, it is. But arguably, that's an impeachable offense.
Well, sure it is.
None of the GOP are courageous enough to take a stand.
Well, they could, but they don't have enough of them.
I know Lindsey Graham. I've met Lindsey Graham. I work with him on Law of the Sea Treaty. I respect the man, but he's taking a pusillanimous approach to this. Mr. McCain, we hope he still has his wheels rolling. We don't know what he's doing and why he's doing it, but Mr. McCain basically disenfranchised the Navajo tribe, a part of their lands, so that he can allow a Rio Tinto consortium to mine uranium in that part of the country. And guess what? Rio Tinto has business dealings with the government of Iran. So, if our congressional leadership is making decisions like this, do you believe you can count on them on matters that we're discussing today?
Yeah, probably not.
No.
And that's why the electorate is responding to Mr. Trump and Mr. Cruz the way they are.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. I just pray that in light of the outsider coming into the presidency, we don't lose the votes in the House and Senate to get a majority so where we can turn this around. Because, I mean, just having an outsider president, unless he's going to act just like Obama and just try to run through a bunch of executive orders, he's not going to have the votes to make a difference either.
But it's not the man in the White House that only makes the policy. It's the people that he surrounds himself with.
True.
Or she surrounds herself
sure,
with.
True.
And I think that's...
And you know who's surrounding Mr. Obama. He's got socialist people from governments or from entities that do not believe in the United States as a nation with sovereign borders and a U.S. Constitution advising him.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's got Muslims in his cabinet.
I mean, you've got Valerie Jarrett, who's Iranian.
Muslims by themselves in his cabinet is not as objectionable as Muslim Brotherhood in his cabinet.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
There's a distinction that one needs to make.
No, you're right.
I'll slap Bill around during the break.
With a wet salmon?
Yes. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for that excuse right there.
A wet coho salmon, the endangered ones,
exactly. or a sucker fish.
That's right. We're gonna go to Costco and get ourselves a coho salmon, and I'll knock him out in the aisle.
But you know, one of the important aspects of this report, though, is another point is that you've got major criminal activity occurring on reservations that the tribes themselves cannot handle. And that the feds are not stepping in to intervene with.
Like?
That's drugs. Major drugs. Casino.
Shenanigans?
Laundering of money coming in from foreign entities. And illicit activities from domestic entities. Mm. There have been many reports on this that are cited in the report that we prepared. That show that the reservations are like lawless, and you know, they're lawless areas.
Yeah, I was reading just this last week about some of the shenanigans with foreign money and shell companies and the inability to track where the money is actually coming from. And then when they do find out where it's coming from, it's being shuttled through these shell companies that change names and change hands so often they can't. They can't shut them down. It's crazy.
And then they say they have to intrude upon our civil liberties on the phone. But the NSA listens into everything you have to say, or your emails, or your texts, because they have to get to that information.
Sure.
So instead of dealing with it properly overseas, he lets it come here, and then he curtails civil liberties, and now wants to curtail Second Amendment rights and other rights. This is a logical way for a foreign-thinking person to think.
Yeah, and that's where you kind of destroy the argument of we shouldn't be influencing foreign governments and operating overseas. And well, you have to, because if you don't, here it comes, and it's here, and now we've got to root it out of our country because we let it come in. So
we invited it.
Yes.
He opened the borders and said, "Come on in. We need a new electorate."
Yeah.
Yeah. okay, we better take a really quick break. When we come back, can you hit that, you know, some of the final things, anything we didn't cover? We've got probably 20 minutes of real time.
My pleasure.
All righty. We're scaring you this morning on We the People Radio, or this afternoon on We the People Radio. Sorry. It's the pre-Christmas scary stuff. Hey, if you were stuck on topics to talk to your family about at Christmas dinner, you know, you could always get them recordings of the show, and I'm sure you guys could have a nice table discussion. If you're eating turkey, then, you know, at least, you know, it'll be on the topic and on the table.
Yeah, speaking of turkey.
Bob, what do you have for us? Stop the madness. Yeah, that'll teach him. I thought Obama was going to be so great. It was going to be just magical. It's turned out to be not quite as magical.
No, people didn't love him. He thought everybody was going to love him.
Yeah, even the people who thought it was magical, I think, have changed their minds. A lot of them, anyway.
Yeah.
All right, Larry, what have we missed? Hey, tell me this. I keep thinking it on the break and forget to ask you. Okay, when you started this whole thing, this was a lawsuit over water rights, basically.
Yeah, did you expect you were going to get into the weeds on all this other stuff?
We never imagined that we'd find all this, let alone come across all of this. Okay, and there's even more to come in the next lawsuit. And when people see that, it'll blow their minds, and they won't know where to look because they'll realize that the government hasn't told the truth for even over a century. Okay. And unfortunately, you know, there are certain impressions that are broken after you come across this information. And you then have to proceed forward in a way, in the most constructive way possible, based on rock-solid evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And that just, you know, it blows people's, it blew our minds to realize what was going on. When the judge in the hearing in Washington said he didn't want to hear anything about national security, decided he was going to, he was going to decide what the record was going to be.
Mm.
Which is why we're going to get a transcript and we're going to share it with everybody. Because people have to see what this judge did
mm-hmm.
for his boss, ultimately.
Yeah, for his boss. You know, back in November, we saw this whole Syrian refugee hit the front page, and you know, there was a big outcry not to let him in. Donald Trump stepped in, and everybody, you know, jumped down his throat for saying what he said, and then Newsweek came out and reported that you know, all these governors of Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, Idaho, Wisconsin, Michigan, New Hampshire, and Maine refused to accept Syrian refugees, citing national security risks. How much of that do you think they were sitting on until the right time, and now that all this information is coming out, they piped up and cited it as a national security risk because of the Indian reservations, not necessarily, well, it I think the Syrian refugee thing was kind of the...
Well, as you know, there were reports out there that there were allegations out there that were unsubstantiated, that they were dropping the Syrians into Native American reservations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And to some extent, they were dropping them, perhaps if they weren't dropping them directly in, they were dropping them around the reservations, because I had spoken to at least one of them that said that they were very nervous about all the foreigners that didn't speak English around. These were not Mexicans.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not our problem right now. It's not the Mexican infiltration, I think, that people are worried about now.
Well, it's partly that, because you have all types of people that are pretending to be, you know, portraying themselves as others.
Right, but what I'm saying is...
Latin American migrants, and then you have, you know, the Islamic terrorists coming in along the borders. And if you saw in the report, there are a number of different reservations that lie along the northern and southern borders of the United States.
Right.
And yeah, there's drug trade coming across, as well as terrorists coming across. These are known FBI reports that they're surveilling dams down in Arizona. Okay, we just found a report last week in Missouri. There's a Bagnell Dam on Lake Ozark in Missouri. There were a number of Islamic persons who were asking questions about whether they could tour the dam. There were also other reports that over 100 cell phones had been purchased at a Walmart not too far away.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And there was another report that propane tanks were stolen.
Hmm.
Now, people cannot help but to try and associate all these different separate acts.
And isn't it interesting that none of that was really pursued? I mean, that all happened, and there was a little blurb on the news about it, but you never heard anything more about it.
Well, the sheriffs of two different counties on which the dam sits, they dismissed it. Okay, now, come on. I mean, some local sheriffs don't get very much exposure to big issues.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe they were directed to say that, so as not to cause more trouble for the administration on failing to deal with things. Then there's another set of stories that just came out recently regarding flesh-eating disease that has been striking people in Syria, refugees. And now the refugees are dispersing, perhaps carrying the source of this disease with them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember how we all worried about the Ebola? And the administration's allowing all these people with Ebola, or having been in contact with people with Ebola, into the United States? Well, now he's doing it with the Syrian refugees with with the skin-eating disease. Now, CDC should be up on this and should be dealing with it and letting the public know that, yeah, these reports have been out there and we're taking care of them. You won't hear them. You haven't heard them do it yet.
No.
Well, and this is on a website that I'm looking at. Right now, it's Science Alert. Flesh-eating disease is currently spreading across Syria. Okay. Then it's on Huffington Post. Huffington Post, okay? At least they're being journalists about it. A flesh sword disease epidemic is now spreading through Syria. December 16th on one, and December 18th on the other. You would think the CDC would be right on top of this. They're not.
Have there been reports of that disease in the United States with relations to the refugees?
We have no idea because they're not talking about it.
We'll never hear of it.
Now, I'm looking at the Missouri Times, dated December 17th, title of the article, Suspicious Activity at Bagnell Dam, Not Worrisome for State Representative. So they've now raised the level of the politician from a law enforcement officer to a state representative saying, guys, you have nothing to worry about. We got it covered.
Yeah, because they got the inside track.
Well, yeah. It's called cover-up.
Uh-huh.
This administration specializes in cover-up.
Just for kicks, is that a Democratic legislation in that state, or is it Republican?
Oh, the particular representative?
Yeah.
No, actually, he's an uninformed Republican.
Oh.
Just because you're a Republican or Democrat doesn't make you smarter than the other.
No, but I wonder if they have a little bit more connection with the president.
Well, listen, when you get your bread buttered, it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't.
Yeah, being a
That's true. That's true.
So, you know, again, we're at a time right now where Republicans call themselves Republicans but act like Democrats. And Democrats call themselves Democrats and act like socialists.
It's really hard to keep track.
In a postmodern world, I guess words don't have meanings anymore.
Yeah, true.
They get to redefine things.
Yeah, and they've done a pretty good job of that.
Well, listen, we've spoken on prior shows about how they redefine the term science. If they can call climate change more of a threat than this, terrorist threat, then they're smoking stuff.
Well, we learned from Bernie that the global warming causes terrorism. That's actually the cause of it.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I think it's global warming causing all the members of Congress within the Capitol building to inhale their own fumes.
Well, there's some of that going on too.
Yeah. Well, they don't want to get called a denier. I mean, that could be the worst thing for your career.
I know one who got the climate denier award. The local climate crazies gave him a unicorn trophy with number one climate denier. That's something to be proud of.
Well, you know, again, it's hard to deny that there is climate change, right? Because climate always changes.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so therefore the question then becomes, what is the change attributable to? And can you even point a definitive finger on the extent of the natural or the man-made causes? In Europe, they believe that it's all man-made, okay? And in order to do that, they, as we had spoken before about, they redefine science and all the rules for science, evidentiary rules. Now they can claim things as evidencing man-made climate change, whereas under empirical rules from the Enlightenment era, they couldn't do that before.
Well, I like the part about how the science is settled. I mean, if science could ever be settled, we'd still be living, you know, the world would still be flat, and we'd be...
there's no advancement in science.
Yeah, the sun would be rotating around.
Like the White House, right, it's like the White House acting like Pravda and saying, this is the news.
Yeah.
You can't disagree with it.
Bob, one more break? We have one more break, and we're coming back. I was looking at, kind of near the end of your report here, you talked about all the different places that are within 100 miles and or straddling the U.S.-Canada border. We ought to hit that before we before we leave. Don't want to leave out the good stuff at the very end in case people don't read that far.
Well, Erin, you might also want to mention the Udall.
Oh, I was going to because I've crossed swords with them of late, but I'll save that till after the break. Look up the Udall Foundation if you happen to be sitting at a computer and, like, have your barf bag handy because it's really irritating. Oh, and by the way, you're paying for it. So you're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online if you can take it. WeThePeopleRadio.us.
I have a stomach ache. At least I'm not glowing in the dark yet.
Humanity. No more time for last minute shopping. It's time to face your final destiny. It's Christmas at Ground Zero.
Duck and cover, duck and cover.
In the crowd, we can dodge debris while we trim the tree underneath a mushroom cloud.
Home run, Bob. There you go. Duck and cover. Get under your desk, kids.
Under
you'll be
the
fine.
Desk.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. What's not to like? Okay, so Udall Foundation. Those guys, we've crossed paths with them of late on another issue. I'll tell you what, if you just look at their logo, Udall Foundation, civility, integrity, consensus, that should tell it all. But their actual webpage says, the Morris K. Udall and Stuart L. Udall Foundation is a federal agency, oh yeah, right under the president, that we're paying for, providing programs to promote leadership, education, collaboration, and conflict resolution in the areas of environment, public lands, and natural resources. Now, here's the kicker. In order to strengthen Native nations and assist federal agencies and others to resolve environmental conflicts and encourage the continued use and appreciation of our nation's rich resources. I'm sorry, what about the rest of us? It was Native nations and federal agencies. And, you know, interestingly enough, the little project I've been involved with, there is an interest group that has no tie to the land that's in question. And they locked the congressional office out of the meeting, their little consensus meeting. They locked us out. They kept in all the federal agencies, the interest group, and the poor guy that owns the private property. He was like the only guy there. And the other 10, 11, 12 people were all federal agencies or special interest groups, none of which, if it was a lawsuit, would have standing because they don't have any connection to the ground.
Are they the ones that sponsor the coexist bumper stickers?
Probably.
Oh, my gosh.
But their meetings are all about feelings. Let's talk about how everyone feels.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's my little primer on the Udall Foundation. What'd you find, Larry?
Well, they have this new book out. Well, new, it's several years. It's actually 5 years old. That where they redefine, again, the English language for we Americans. You know, as we discussed during the last hour, the concern, especially with sovereign Indian nations and their reservations, is heightened when these reservations are located along U.S. borders. And there are a number of tribes that have many miles of border with Canada or with Mexico where these terrorist cells and members can jump across without being detected. Now, Newsweek came out with an interesting report last month concerning which of the border states, or which of the states within the U.S., including border states, were welcoming of Syrian refugees, and which governors of those states had refused. And some of these states that are, have, you know, admitted them are along Mexico's and Canada's borders. Now, the Udall Foundation is promoting greater Native American sovereignty. Then you're depending upon these tribes to govern not only themselves, but to govern the admittance of foreign elements within national borders. And in many cases, these tribes can't even govern themselves.
Hmm.
Now, that's what this administration is doing.
Yeah.
The Udall Foundation is taking U.S. taxpayer money because it is an independent executive agency. Now, that's significant in itself that it's an independent agency because it's not even subject, arguably, to White House dictate. EPA is an independent agency, and look what it does.
Yeah, no kidding. And funded by the government.
funded by you.
Yeah,
funded by me.
Exactly.
Well, the thing
that Congress is only too happy to give them more money because these people who are our representatives don't do their homework and their staffs don't do it either.
Well, see, the brutal part is groups like the Udall Foundation, they operate a little bit under the radar because how would you really know that they were there unless you had to deal with them? I mean, they kind of came at us out of the blue. It's like the who?
Well, you know, I remember our conversation the last time. You actually mentioned it to me, and I looked it up, and then I saw it here again.
Mm-hmm.
They refer to Indian nations that are along borders as indigenous border states.
Yeah.
Indigenous border states, which means these tribes view U.S. national borders as a problem. They're political borders, whereas they're indigenous nations with territories, aboriginal lands that span borders. So they believe in no borders. They want to travel freely within their aboriginal lands, and they find the hassle imposed by the Mexican, the U.S., and the Canadian Border Patrol officials as problematic. In fact, the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribe of Montana actually called in the CPD, the Border Patrol, because they were so unnerved by having to submit their documents in order to travel from the U.S. to Canada and vice versa. And, of course, the Obama administration probably gave them some regulatory waiver, so they didn't have to do that.
Mm. Yeah, that's pretty handy.
Call out your Indian card, okay? You have it in your wallet, you flip it out, and all of a sudden you get a waiver.
Yeah.
Or you get free money.
And you pay no taxes.
Or you get a defense contract. This tribe gets all of them.
It's a neat trick if you can get it, and they've really scored on this one. But I really think people should consider taking your report to their elected federal representatives and make sure that they're aware of this, especially if they will be voting on any sovereignty issues in the future, which I'm sure they will.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I met Montana's only congressman, Ryan Zinke, in the Salt Lake City airport back in September. Actually, earlier October, when I was traveling to see people in Southern Oregon and Northern California. And I said to him, you know, sir, I'm impressed with your service in Iraq. You were guarding the front door against all these terrorists. But since he's come back to roost in the U.S. Congress from the perch of Montana, he's letting these people come in the back door.
Yeah, totally not paying attention.
How does he not even want to address this? I mean, that is negligent, if not grossly negligent, on his part.
Well, he can only do that if
people of Montana.
Yeah, the people in Montana need to tell him. Hey, Larry, yeah. we have run out of time.
Larry, we need to have you back. There's just so much more we need to talk about.
So we hope everybody goes in and checks out your good work there at WeThePeopleRadio.us. And we know Hanukkah is over, but we thought we'd play you a Hanukkah song anyway in closing.
Print that report out and share it with your friends.
Over the past.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank you. Thank you both. Appreciate it.
Have a great one.
You too now. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
You too.
Is it with a C or H? I am confused. What about those N's and K's? Do you use one or two? I remember when I was back in elementary school, a Spanish kid told me
that it starts with a silent J. But Julio was wrong, or maybe he was right. Can someone decide? Make up your mind. Try spell check in Webster's. Is there an answer to my question? Someone, please help me. Just tell me, how do you spell Hanukkah? Watching a spelling bee on ESPN2, and these kids were spelling words that don't come naturally to me.